One of the things that was very important to me, that my father, well-intended as he was to support the family, he was never home. He was a retailer, and there was no internet. There was no cell phones. You had to be there. And I never missed important events for my kids. And it probably cost me financially because I didn't attend every industry event and I didn't chase after every rainbow. But you can't get those days back, right? And being a parent, you find the greatest quote was, "The days go slow, but the years go fast."
Welcome back to the Performance Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, Amy Calandrino. After over a decade of advising entrepreneurs and investors, I've met some impactful and influential people around along the way. So today I have the pleasure of speaking with Neil Sherman, my friend Sarah Malcolm, who is also in the commercial real estate field, had introduced us to each other. TagX Brands is a company that has redefined sustainability in the business sector. It's not just a company, it's a testament to what can be achieved when ingenuity meets purpose. And again, like we got introduced by Sarah Malcolm, she is a champion of getting great minds together. So I had to make sure to say that. She knew that our shared dedication to sustainability, innovation, mindset, and drive for excellence would make for a compelling conversation today. So welcome to the show, Neil.
Thanks, Amy. I'm honored to have been invited.
Yeah. So I can't believe I'm on 50 something episodes now, and we are top 5% globally and still growing week after week. I have more listeners. It's been really cool. So
it's unbelievable. I got to listen to, I haven't listened to all 50
yeah.
plus podcasts, but I did listen to some, and it's great wisdom of people from different aspects of the business world. So hats off to you for investing the time and effort in sharing this message with others. So.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. It's been great. So why don't you, I mean, I've gotten to know you and our friend Sarah knows you, but can you give our listeners a brief overview of TagX Brands and what motivated you to start it?
Sure. So we've been in business 37 years. We're going on our 38th year. And you can do the math. It's, you know, it's, and as you as an entrepreneur know, not every day is a wonderful hunky dory day. Every day is different. I grew up in an entrepreneurial family.
Oh.
My father had a chain of Napa auto parts stores in the Finger Lakes in upstate New York. And he had seen how dysfunctional family businesses are. And he decided that he wanted his sons to be self-made, find their way in the world. So that's what we did. And my path took me to school abroad and business school and brand management in the food business. But I was not meant for corporate America. I think you can probably relate to that, right?
Yes.
I was not meant for the big bureaucratic place. I learned a lot. I started my career at Kraft General Foods in marketing. It was great. But it was just not moving fast enough for me. And 37 years ago, in the early days of prepared foods in the supermarket, we started by putting kiosks, self-service kiosks in supermarkets, soup bars for Campbell's, salad bars, coffee kiosks for Maxwell House. And every time we'd show up, the retailer would say, "You got to get rid of X, the papaya juicing machine, the sushi rolling machine." And I was like, you know, insulted. I'm not a junk guy. I was a marketing guy. And the retailers like Wegmans and Publix and Harris Teeter said, "Listen, marketing guy, if you don't get that stuff out of here, you're not bringing your kiosk in." And like real estate, you're performance-based. So we were paid based on placement. And so we took out the equipment, brought it to our shop, cleaned it up, and started selling it. Brought back the proceeds. And the retailers were like, scratch their head. Like, we don't know how to apply these funds. No one's ever given us money for that junk before. And they started asking us to do other liquidation projects. And it turns out we were a lot more effective at liquidation than we were at kiosks. And that spawned a 38-year journey through mountains and valleys of the entrepreneurial world that you and all your listeners can relate to. So
it, you know, it has been a lot of mountains and valleys. But what's interesting is, like, I know when I'm in a period that's like uncomfortable and it's, I don't feel like I have my footing, I actually am like, okay, something super cool is around the corner. I don't know what it is right yet, but, and every single time I'm like, oh, that makes, you know, just figuring out who your right client is, what are the right services or solutions you want to provide as you go through that with people and all the different things you think that, you know.
Well, you have great wisdom that took me 30 of the 37 years to get, is that you don't realize that, you know, and there's all these quotes, you know, every door that closes, a window opens, or, you know, if you just, you know, around the next corner, take the shot. The interesting thing is that if you have the ability to connect with people, which you have an amazing ability, as does our friend Sarah Malcolm, and listen to them, truly listen, not just talk, because there's so many people in business and politics and media and you name it that just like to hear themselves speak and don't listen, don't learn about other people. One of the reasons you and I connected was I was like, wow, this is a really fascinating woman. She has two young kids, a business, and yet she's sharing these stories of other people because you're interested in people's stories, right? And when you do that, you find out that in each nugget of journey that, wow, that's kind of an interesting perspective. It's very lonely being an entrepreneur. It's very lonely doing it. And even though you have people around you, you know, and you may have a wonderful support system, socially, family, house of worship, whatever, the downers are down. And my father used to say, in retrospect, he never advised me one way or the other because he wanted me to find my own path in the world. When I would go to him with a problem, he would say, "You'll figure it out." And I hated it. I wanted him to tell me what to do. In retrospect, I now say the same thing to my kids, right? "You'll figure it out." And at the end of the day, if you have the core support system, you'll make it through. Hard work, you know, achieves and finds it. So, you know, it's the highest of high and the lowest of low, but I would not trade it for anything.
Yeah. My mom went with me today because I had nanny issues. And I told you I took my kids to the beach and, you know, decided to kind of flip it, you know, and just make the most out of the day. And I'm still going through like an evolution, you know, in my business and figuring out, you know, what's like our right path forward, you know, how much do I want to expand? Do I want to stay around this size and all this kind of stuff? And she's like, "Why don't you just go like work for someone else? I know how hard this is for you." And I'm like, "Yeah, but I just get so much of a reward. I get to see get my clients into spaces where they grow, or properties where they're able to create wealth for their, I don't know. I get so much joy from it. And one thing I want to touch on, you were talking about, is listening. I think you can generally tell whether someone cares or doesn't care and whether they listen. And I was reading The Only Sales Guide You'll Ever Need by Anthony Iorino, and he does a lot of consultative sales, and it's a really good book. And it's too funny. Actually, he said, "This is the only sales guide you ever need." He had two more books after that. So he should have probably not named the first one.
He had more ideas.
He had more ideas. Yeah, it's fine.
He had more ideas.
Could have named the first one differently. But I thought it was really interesting is that he talked about himself and his family and how they didn't really necessarily do the sales that you would like expect in the 70s and the 80s. And they had started just listening to people and having more of a long range, you know, solution. Not that you're not selling. I think part of it is he talked about like getting the next commitment, you know, and that there is that process. But I think at the end of the day, for me, I've seen so much more success by listening, or even just, I had a lot of clients connect, which is super cool. Yeah.
It's interesting you talk about listening. There was a comedian who once said, you know, there's two parts of the conversation. There's me talking and me waiting for you to finish so I could keep talking, right? And so my perspective is that you get a lot more listening because that helps guide your business. And I have relationships, as you did and you will for decades to come, that are decades long. Mm-hmm. And it's not just about the transaction, it's about the relationship. And those relationships are built on, you know, sincere care, empathy, you know, whatever. Business, obviously, it's got to have a sound foundation in business in the beautiful free market in which we live. But, you know, it's those relationships that are a lifetime. And that's what you, you know, you're always building those relationships. And in the most dire of circumstances in business, and we have had some in our journey, we were in workout with a bank. We, you know, as you know, we bought an old Army Depot in the Finger Lakes in upstate New York to run our business. And those were not good times. I mean, they were not good times. And when you're in the middle of it, you just want to say, I'm out. But your guttural, there's an inner voice that says, no, this is the path. And there have been various points in time. You talk about the inability to, Mo Sherman in the background there barking. But you go into business and you build relationships with people, and those things transcend a great deal, right? They transcend all those peaks and valleys. And then, like you said, you put people together and you're like, you know, people say, well, you put them together and you had no vested interest in it. It's a very sincere way to build community. Yeah. So you built the Amy Caladrino ecosystem of relationships, and, you know, it helps everybody, you know, so it's all good.
I did steal something from the 80s. I actually call it the A-Team.
Were you born in the 80s?
I was born in the 80s, but no, that wasn't it. Was it Mr. T or what was the show? And he'd have the A-Team, and like there was this whole like TV show. Yeah. So I call it the A-Team, and my husband's like, yeah, that was a show. And I was like, oh, well, you know, I'm still going to use it.
You get dated. You can use it. It's the A-Team. And you know what? You know, especially when you, because you serve companies of all sizes, right?
Right.
Small entrepreneurs to big companies, real estate developers, one-off buildings. And there's so many people that hit the door when someone's in trouble. In other words, they're not there to sincerely help them or be supportive of them. And it goes so, people remember that, right? They remember who was there when I was getting kicked around or when I was down and just checked on me. You know, just checked on me. So that's part of the relationships of, I think that that is part of one of the things that has been, other than my family and my universe, joining Young Presidents Organization some 20 years ago has been a game changer for me. And it is 40,000 members globally that, you know, walk in the shoes of the entrepreneur or leading a public company. You know, there's all different kinds. And it's a support group of people that know what it's like to manage family, business, community, all those things together. And I would say it's the most meaningful thing. And there are other groups. My business partner was the global chair of Entrepreneurs Organization. There's Vistage, there's real estate forums that exist. And asking for help, not just economic help, but help me think this through. The answer's out there, right? It's the old 6 degrees of separation. But in reality, with the network somebody like you has, or Sarah, or these other people that you bring on your podcast that are amazing, you're probably like 2 steps away from any answer you want. Not five. You don't have to go 5 degrees of separation or 6 degrees of separation. You're like maybe 2, right? And so you just got to ask and ask questions. And that's where the listening comes into play. So
It's interesting, the listening. And then I was just thinking of a couple of things that you've mentioned so far. Is it's kind of lonely being an entrepreneur. And I think because it is very unique. And I think because we demonstrate such strength and confidence often in like the leadership roles, everybody thinks that it's okay. And I was thinking of the book I read the other just not too long ago, Plan B, by Sheryl Sandberg. And her husband, they were on vacation and he was running and he fell on the machine and he passed away. And she talked about afterwards, nobody wanted to ask her really how she was doing because they were afraid, they didn't want to talk about it. But I have found with this podcast that it is good to talk about the things, and it makes you feel like you're not like alone. So I could see how being a part of like YPO and in these other organizations where you're in another community and you can share these things so that you don't necessarily have this loneliness, how powerful that could be.
And the loneliness, just to be clear, the loneliness isn't only like a depression kind of loneliness.
No.
It's the, you know, when you hire people that are just kind of like nice people and don't perform.
Yep.
Which is much more difficult than hiring somebody who does something inappropriate that's easy to part ways with.
Yeah.
And as opposed to somebody who just the nicest guy or woman that you'd ever want to meet, and they're just not performing and there's nothing you can do about it. And so you just got to part ways with them. That is the lonely decision. And that's when you talk to other people and they can give you wisdom in that regard. So.
Well, that's what I'm saying is like, you have to almost have like someone who my best friend, her husband's an entrepreneur and my husband has his own company and then she's done real estate investing. So we can have candid conversations all day long. And, you know, when we're on vacation and they understand where you're coming from, but if you haven't had to deal with, you know, the marketing, the HR and all these different components of the business and the ups and downs financially and all these different things, and you have just had your one role within a company, and not to say that that's not meaningful and great for someone, they don't necessarily understand it. So I understand it's not like this necessarily a depressive thing. It's just, unless someone else is in a similar position within their field, they don't necessarily understand it.
Well, it's interesting. You talk about our business, which is the evolution of how we responded to client needs. And then we became a resource for the clients totally accidentally, helping people when they were closing locations, remodeling locations, opening locations with all the contents, furniture, fixtures, equipment. And what happens when it's no longer needed by a client? Does it go out to, you know, the dump or, you know, some landfill somewhere? Does it get abandoned? And so we found solutions for that. And in doing so, finding an aftermarket place, pioneering an aftermarket place in the restaurant food service space and retail space of fixtures and equipment, the next entrepreneur, the smaller entrepreneur who may not be in a position to be able to buy new equipment or buy new, you know, restaurant, back of the house, oven, whatever, can buy it on our platform. So the one person's challenge or the normal attrition of things creates a marketplace. And over time, we've created what is now the largest aftermarket place of restaurant food service equipment called restaurantequipment.bid. And we have as many as 1 million views a day. We can't get enough product because people over time have found comfort, credibility, and trust in our marketplace.
Mm.
So many people in the aftermarket, I mean, I know the real estate world is a challenging world and there's people of different levels of competence and integrity and scale and all that. Mm-hmm. And we just respect everybody. So we have clients, everybody from Disney to Darden in your backyard to Wegmans and, you know, Cornell, Yale, all their equipment is entrusted to us to sell in the aftermarket. The people buying from us need to know that we have integrity in our marketplace, that we're not overpromising that, oh, this is a brand new widget, you know, or mm-hmm. mixer or oven. And, you know, that they know that they're getting candid, transparent, you know, feedback on what the product is. And so that's exploded over time. And so, you know, it's a delicate balance when you talk about your own journey. How big do you want to grow? Do you want to add people? Do you want to expand geographically? How do you balance that with being a mother of, you know, kids under 7, you know, and how do you be there for those kids? One of the things that was very important to me that my father, well-intended as he was to support the family, he was never home. He was a retailer and there was no internet. There was no cell phones. You had to be there.
Right.
And I never missed important events for my kids. And it probably cost me financially because I didn't attend every industry event and I didn't chase after every rainbow. But you can't get those days back, right?
Right.
And being a parent, you find the greatest quote was, the days go slow, but the years go fast. And when you're in the mix of it, you can't think about that. But in retrospect, you know, when your kids are in their 20s and 30s or whatever, you realize that that's a finite time you can never recover. You can always make more money later,
right?
Or go to another industry event later,
mm-hmm.
but you can never recapture the lacrosse game or the play or concert or whatever it is. So.
Yeah, it's interesting. I ran into one of my friends. I was on track. I could have been, you know, president of like CCIM, the Certified Commercial Investment Members for Florida. I had already been a president here locally, and I was doing all that. And then I was just finding that things were really starting to creep past five, and also my clients, when things come up, it's like do or die. Like, especially, you know, if they get like a gnarly, like lease renewal from their landlord, and I just have to be adaptive and leave space for things that come up with my kids and leave space to come up for my clients. And so I had to like pull back, and he told me like, how is things working out? I'm like, you know, the thing is, I'm going to be 40 like this month. I could in 15 years from now start back out and go back that path and do that. Yeah. But I think for now it makes more sense for me to do things that are more like, so I do some community. I volunteer here in the community. My family, we're starting a foundation. I'm doing all those kinds of things, but I just can't do the really big, like big roles right now that are like a part-time job on top of
you have to do what's best for you.
But I do find that I am like the least stressed that I've ever been since I pulled back from taking on all that extra stuff. Even though, you know, I was around great people and everything, it was just too much pressure and too many things to do. And so I get a lot more, you know, value out of the construct I have right now. So
the one thing that a dear friend of mine said, he always asks people when he meets them of whatever level of success or they have, is how do you spend your day and how do you balance your day? And time is the most precious. You can always find dollars to invest, mm-hmm. especially in, you know, the world in which we live. There's a lot of people with a lot of excess capital to invest, but you can never recover your own time. You know, right. You can never recover. You can never say, I want to go back and do this other thing for my business or myself or my life. So, you know, that's part of it. So,
yeah. I think that's so true. I mean, there's nothing you can do. Once your time is gone from the day, you can't necessarily get it back. So, well, I do commercial real estate. And what the coolest part of our conversation when we were getting ready to talk today is you talked about taking that Army base up in the Finger Lakes region. Do you want to talk a little bit about that and how you use that facility, especially now that people understand your business a bit more too?
Sure. So through the 90s, our business expanded at an incredible rate. Mm-hmm. We started managing national programs, you know, the demise of Boston Market. We managed 500 closures in a week and liquidated 100 locations and took on more and more responsibility. We ended up, Amy, with 36 warehouses around the country of various sizes, 200 square feet to 150,000. And that became very challenging to manage, right? You can imagine it's tough to manage one warehouse, let alone 36.
Yeah.
So if you recall in the 90s, there were a number of military bases around the country that closed. Most were in metropolitan areas. They had developers come out and build, you know, warehouses and other things along the way. And there was a handful of the 72 bases that closed were in rural America. One happened to be in the Finger Lakes region of upstate New York, where I grew up and vowed never to move back to. These are famous last words, right? And they invited me to go look at the warehouses, and we don't need A or B or even C space. You know, it's used restaurant equipment or new surplus restaurant equipment. And my business partner, who's from Syracuse, also vowed never to move back to upstate New York. But there was this 1,000-acre parcel that was an old warehouse system. And the Economic Development Authority didn't want somebody to come in, you know, just kind of exploit the space, basically. They wanted somebody who would come in and use it. And I was a native son, and my father had a good reputation in the community. And so they said, well, we'd like you to take it over, but we want you to be there. And I was like, what does that mean? They said, well, we want you to be an occupant in the facility so that you're there, so that there's somebody there managing it. Long story short, we bought a 1,000-acre Army base in the middle of the Finger Lakes, 63 buildings, 2.5 million square feet. The Army had let many of the buildings, you know, demise. Not all of them had roofs, right? And Not all of them had walls still up. And so we started bringing equipment in there, and we consolidated all these other warehouses to the facility. And through the early 2000s, simultaneously managed, we're the largest seller on eBay of restaurant food service equipment. We were managing logistics for chains and their rollouts and remodeling program. Over time, we brought on a real estate partner, a company called Flom Management. Creative Reuse is their program. And they basically have been partners with us for 20 some of the 23 years. And very disciplined. They don't overly invest on the speculative nature. And we started adding tenants. So we have Amish farmers and egg wholesalers and hemp people and, you know, cell towers and all sorts of other things in there. We have no debt on the project, and we're continuing to find ways to reuse this military base that was a distribution center and for the military. And it was the biggest one. So, and then since that point in time, you know, we have clients that, you know, we bring in used trailers, tractors, trailers, refrigerated, non-refrigerated. And we sell them from there on our platforms. And so it's been, it turns out the place that we grew up that was in the middle of nowhere is a day's truck run from half the U.S. and Canada's population and allows us to scale. So, you know, the biggest project we ever took in was 145 truckloads of surplus at once. And there's not a lot of places in America that can absorb that. So they have done a great job, our partners, of being very disciplined in this. And many of my YPO friends early in this process told me it was the most foolish thing I'd ever done. And for about 14 years, as we were trying to perfect title from the Army, which is the easiest people to deal with, and making sure that the land was clean and everything else, you know, there were a lot of lonely times when I was like, screw it, we're not going to do it. Simultaneously with that, we went into workout with our bank because two very large clients defaulted during bankruptcy. One was Borders Books and the other was Krispy Kreme. And so those three things kind of hit us all at once in the late 2000s.
Yeah.
At the same time, I had committed to manage the global leadership conference for YPO in Miami. And so I kept saying, there's a company out of South Florida called Kai's Real Estate, large residential broker. And he had gone through the 2008 period. And he say, you stick with it. He goes, you'll learn through this process, like you had mentioned earlier in our conversation. Something, a nugget will come. The relationships will be there. People will respect that you didn't throw in the towel when all this other crap was going on. Excuse my French. It turned out to be an endurance, you know, because you're dealing with creditors, everybody else. And everybody said, well, you should just file bankruptcy. And I talk about this now, you know, at first. And I was like, nope, not doing it. And I didn't do it. And it probably, there's a lot of people, you know, because it's for your lifetime. Those are your relationships. So, you know, some, I don't know, 15 years later, we're like six payments away from being done with our bank. And, you know, it was a heck of a journey. But like you said, if you have perspective, you know, there's three things that drive me. One is possibilities, which I said in my speech at that global leadership conference, you know, you dream big dreams, right? Mm-hmm. One is persistence, which is the entrepreneurial thing. And the third is perspective, is that you realize that, you know, your family, if you're fortunate to have a good relationship with your family, your spouse, children, everybody's healthy. That's perspective. I was six when my mother got cancer, and she fought diligently for 18 years. So she got to meet my now wife. Then, but she always had perspective. Every day's a gift. And that, I think, if you look at many entrepreneurs who have succeeded through adversity, there's some adversity in their early life that was just you know, difficult in some way, shape, or form, personal, family, whatever. And, you know, every time somebody would bum out about some minutia thing, I would be like, you know, every day's a gift. And then as you get older, you've experienced the loss of peers. And, you know, you realize that being an entrepreneur is a pretty cool journey. It's not always pretty, and it's not always fun, and it's not always enjoyable. And there's a lot of conflicts that you deal with, but I would not trade it. And there are times, like you said, like your mother said to you today at the beach, Amy, why don't you just go get a job somewhere and then you don't have to deal with all this. But then the journey, you don't control your own destiny, I believe. You know, like when my father, who lost his job in the early 60s, and that's why he bought a Napa store in the Finger Lakes, which was considered Siberia for somebody from the New York metropolitan area. And my mother cried for 5 years, but then fell in love with, you know, small town America and everything else. But you realize that you control your own destiny as an entrepreneur. Now that's a powerful thing, because most entrepreneurs have attention issues, you know, focus issues. That is the thing I strive for every day. I'm obsessed with planning and plotting things out, because if I don't, I'll just be a wandering generality. There was a sales guy named Zig Ziglar.
Yes,
before you, but you've probably read or heard about him.
I read his stuff. I think he's going to be in one of my quotes I put on my Instagram, you know, coming up. That was a really good quote that he just had a couple days ago.
He had a profound influence on me, because it was in the early days of being an entrepreneur and you had to be positive. And he would tell these stories about, you know, going door to door selling whatever he sold. I think, you know, it was insurance or something like that, going door to door. And, there's a couple of quotes that are so grounded in who I am. One is, you can get anything you want in life if you help enough other people get what they want, which is about generosity, right? It's not about what's in it for me. It's if you help enough people over a long period of time, you'll eventually find your own way. And the other thing which drives me every day is that you have to be a meaningful specific instead of a wandering generality. Meaning you have to be very specific and intentional.
Yes.
With what you're doing in business. Now, my problem is I've wanted everybody to be happy and come to me for everything, which affects the focus of the business. This is only in the last 4 or 5 years that the business has exploded. Part of it could be the growth of us or technology, but part of it also is the growth of, you know, my focus. I don't, you know, your listeners and some of the people that you've interviewed, you can tell their story that it's evolved the entrepreneurial path. Here's how this happened and here's how this happened. And that's how I got to where I am. Well, that's because they're out there every day doing it, right?
Yeah.
Right? They're out there doing something, right?
Well, I think it's the consistency for sure as well. And that's persistence, you know, and not giving up. But yeah, it's definitely been a journey. And Bob Knackle, who was on my podcast not too long ago, and he has been with, he had his own boutique brokerage, sold it to Cushman Wakefield, then went to JLL. JLL gave him a great Valentine's Day gift and said, you know, we don't want you here anymore. And now he's restarted his firm. But when I visit him in New York in October, he's like, you're just going to be very specific of what you do. And so I would say my main focus is growth-minded, you know, entrepreneurs, and taking them through the whole life cycle of the business to help them, you know, grow and go through those phases. And later on, maybe connecting them with someone for the M&A part, or, you know, the whole part of it, or whether it's a handover to their children or whatever that is. But then I met some great people along the way. So if maybe one of their service providers is more corporate, then I might work with their corporate real estate, you know, department, or I might, you know, connect with someone. But it's got to be the right, you know, vibe for me. And I found that, because otherwise I'm just not an order taker, and I'm not necessarily a broker's broker. And I've talked to different friends about different things that happened in Orlando. There was a deal that if I was the broker, I would have never told the owner to do this. And there's just different things that, you know, sometimes the brokers tend to, it's more like commission focused rather than people focused. And like, I want to get the best like solution for my clients. And at the end of the day, everything's going to work out fine for me. It always has. Are there rough patches? Absolutely. But if I just keep doing that, but I think a lot of owners or tenants end up with heartburn later on because the broker was more self-serving than necessarily, you know, and not all of them. I'm not
that's
saying
universal,
that.
I know by the way, that's not just in the real estate space.
Yeah, it's in
the restaurant
everything.
Space, the manufacturing space, the distribution space. It's
all of them. Yeah.
So. It's but you have a good head on your shoulders. So.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. I've always just tried to do the right thing, practice the golden rules. Well, we've been chatting for a little bit, so I want to talk about looking ahead. So have you filled up your space up in New York, or you still have plenty of room?
Because many of the buildings aren't sincere buildings. You know, this is Mo Sherman, by the way. So
hi.
Mo wanted to be part of the discussion. I would say we're not filled up, no. But we have other development projects going on there that are not necessarily building related, that are more land related. And it's moving along. It's a long journey.
Yeah.
Real estate is a long, long journey. I remember there's a company in Albany that bought three military bases in the 1970s. And the entrepreneur there said, you know, it takes 30 years. And I was like, yeah, give me a break. And I was like, I'm not waiting 30 years. And now I'm thinking about it, you know, in another 10 years, it'll be 30 years, you know.
Right.
And it's the fact that we've survived and dealt with the vagaries of, you know, all your clients, and you have to deal with different government entities and different municipalities. And because it's 1,000 acres, it's in like, I forget the exact number our partner told me, it's like 15 different, you know, water district and county, state, just all these different things that makes it a big mess. So no, we're not filled up, but we have facilities in Los Angeles, Dallas, and now Orlando. We are continuing to grow and build our e-commerce business and build our service business to help people deal with the life cycle events of facilities and equipment. You know, there's a lot of companies that are on the front end that'll help you build or sell you equipment, whatever. A lot of people will help you maintain it. But what happens when it's no longer meant to be, or it's closed, or whatever be the case? So we take a lot of pride in that. So, and we keep things out of a landfill, which we never thought of the company as being green, Amy.
Yep.
It was just the right thing to do to help people sell their surplus to the subsequent user, right? To the second generation, you know, second generation user or third generation user. And about 6 years ago, 4 years ago, 5 years, I forget the exact, some of the clients goes, have you ever measured what is being deflected from the landfill? And I said, no. And one of my guys goes, what do you mean? We weigh everything. We measure everything. To launch it on the site, you have to know all the specifications of the equipment. So my son at the time was at MIT getting his MBA, and his roommate, coincidentally, had focused in on sustainability in the food industry.
Yeah.
And so he started doing this study for us with Wegmans, a regional chain called Hopdoddy, and Yale University. And he started quantifying in this study what was being deflected from a landfill. And it's staggering. It's on our website, the study. But now each time we do a project, we not only calculate how much for real estate people, we reduce the cost to demo a location for the next tenant. Because we sell the contents, the FF&E, the furniture, fixers, and equipment. But we also keep it out of a landfill, and we generate dollars for them. So there's a cost savings.
Yeah.
There's a return, and it's good for sustainability. So much of sustainability, as you well know, is lip service oftentimes, right? It's people that are talking about doing the right thing for ESG, but don't have a hook to hang their hat on as it relates to it. So, but the environment's important, and it's not the reason we started the company, but it's a good thing that we do. So,
yeah, I found that was really interesting. You were like, can they get rid of like the papaya juicing machine or whatever this thing is? So we even have room to put the kiosks, and then,
right.
And then it's like, oh, wait, can you keep doing that for us? Like, and then you're like, wait a second, I'm making,
I didn't think, I just thought it was a courtesy to get our program in. And we were, you know, the kiosks were good, but we weren't the best at it because, right. You know, food turns quickly, you know, new concepts, people get bored, you know, that kind of stuff. And so that's how we ended up where we are. So
that's great. So how do people get a hold of you?
Right. So my email is nsherman, S-H-E-R-M-A-N, at tagexbrands.com, T-A-G-E-X-Brands.com. The company is TagX Brands. The auction platform is called restaurantequipment.bid. And now for many of your listeners are in Florida. We've always had a presence in Florida, but not a physical presence. So we're incredibly excited about that in Orlando.
Nice.
We have a great guy who joined our team as a regional operations manager who spent 17 years at Disney. And he has added a great deal of professionalism in the market. So, you know, anybody in retail, restaurants, food service, hospitality, they always have surplus that needs to go somewhere. And
yeah.
So we can help them with that. So it's TagX Brands and it's restaurantequipment.bid. Those are the two primary ways to reach out.
And if that guy needs to plug in, I know people with CFHLA, Central Florida Hotel and Lodging Association,
yeah, that would be
all
great.
The peoples, all the, like, just to get the connections, to get to more connections, all
right.
Those kinds of things. So
all good.
But yeah, but I'm so smart to go to Orlando though. I said 5 years ago, even I would not think we were robust and such a strong entrepreneur community as we are now. I think with COVID and the population migration here and just the continued migration, it's great. And I have people that used to invest in Miami that's like, you know, they're betting on Orlando now. So it's
Orlando has been great for us.
Yeah.
It's central to South Florida mm-hmm. and Georgia. It's within, you know, what is it, 6 hours to Atlanta and 4 hours to 3.5, 4 hours to Miami, an hour to 3 hours to Tampa, depending on traffic, right? So it's and Jacksonville.
I don't go to Tampa anymore.
What's that?
I said I don't go to Tampa much, although I found out I can take the Amtrak, although that still might take like 4 hours. Like,
yeah, I have a nephew and his wife and baby are in Tampa. It's beautiful. Tampa's great. Orlando's great. It's all good. When you live in upstate New York and the older you get and the less engaged you are in the snow world, Florida is a wonderful place to be. Yeah. And you're in Orlando. I agree with you. I think the entrepreneurial opportunity in Orlando is great.
Yeah. Well, awesome. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today. Let's continue to go beyond and strengthening that performance mindset. This is Amy Calandrino signing off.